Welcome to Toddler Toolkit. Hi, parents. Today we are reviewing this book called Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up by Abigail Schreier. Just came out within the last week. And why do we care about this book? Okay, well, when I purchased the book last week, it was number one in pediatrics and number one in marriage and family and number three in parenting and relationships. So I am a toddler coach and I help parents with their toddlers. So I'm going to be looking at this book through the lens of helping and serving toddler parents. And she does talk about the whole age range and she gives examples with toddlers in her book. So this is the perfect way. And so I've identified five key themes that I want to talk about with you today. So the first theme is wanting to diagnose our children. The second theme is aggression. The third theme is schools teaching different practices, such as empathy and talk therapy and that kind of therapy in the school system. The fourth part is parenting styles and gentle parenting. And the fifth theme is independence for our children. All right, let's get started with part one, wanting to diagnose our children. All right, so I'm going to read you the quote. One in six U.S. children aged 2 to 8 years old, about 17.4%, had a diagnosed mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder. And that is a quote in her book, but it was taken from the CDC. Let's start the conversation about wanting to diagnose our children. So in the book, it felt like Abigail Schreier, the author, she was saying that parents kind of, they see these behaviors, these things happen with their kids, and they want an explanation. So they're more likely to want to get their kid diagnosed. But not only that, when kids are in school and they're not able to sit still, they're not able to do what is expected in elementary school, that the teacher is more likely to tell the parents, hey, I think your kid has ADHD. They need to get assessed for that. So let's go ahead and focus on ADHD. ADHD can be diagnosed as early as 4 years old. In some rare cases, I guess it could be earlier, but usually typically that is rare. So 4 years old to 16 years, and your child must exhibit six of the characteristics for 6 months. So not just randomly, but consistently over 6 months. So can toddlers have ADHD? Well, according to the AAP, toddlers definitely can have ADHD between the ages of 1 to 3. And while some toddlers might be diagnosed before the age of 4, it is possible that is really not as likely. But I am seeing all around a lot of toddler parents are wondering if their kid has ADHD because maybe they have trouble paying attention. Maybe they're exhibiting some aggressive behavior or some of the symptoms. And they are wondering. So Abigail is kind of saying, hey, parents are quick like to diagnose their children. I think it is human nature to want to understand our children. And so there is more awareness. So I kind of disagree in the way. I don't think parents are just rushing for their child to have a diagnosis necessarily. I think they just want to understand their child and there's more awareness on the topic. Even with social media, because I have seen experts talking about children with ADHD or even toddlers with ADHD. I have seen that on Instagram. So clearly that there is a message going out. And I think it that beacon of awareness is just more around, especially for parents. And that is due to the internet, social media. And beyond diagnosis like ADHD, parents can also want to understand their children through labels. So this is kind of something that I have seen more recently, or my eyes have been open to, is that, you know, some parents identify their children are highly sensitive or they're deeply feeling, and there's different parenting doctors or experts who've coined these terms. And while I think that is super helpful because that helps you understand, why is my kid acting this way? Oh, because they're deeply feeling. okay, that's why they're screaming or yelling at me, go away. And when I go away and I act like I don't care, it gets even worse and they have even more shame. Okay, so I need to learn how to deal with them pushing me away, but still learn how to support them and be there for them. Okay, so yeah, that is totally helpful for parents. And again, more awareness. I do think, however, that labels are labels. So when I was studying my master's degree in education, we always talked about the whole child before we talked about anything specific like ADHD or autism or anything like that. It was always the child first. And of course, some people love to identify, like, I am deaf. There's a lot of pride in the deaf community, right? And I think there is a lot of pride now in the autism community as well, or being neurodivergent. There is an upcoming pride. I think that's a beautiful thing. But I think as far as parents go with young children, while finding commonalities and help for some of these things is extraordinarily helpful, our kids are more than just the label and they have unique personalities and some of the things they do might not all fit into those descriptions. So yeah, in some ways I agree with the author that it's not exactly about the diagnosis, because I think it's important parents get the support they need, because I've seen a lot of parents saying they had their child under evaluation for autism at a very young age, like 2. So there's a lot of 2-year-olds and I've even heard in the twin community, like 2-year-old twins that have autism. And that's important because we know, okay, this is the criteria. This is the behaviors. These are the things we're seeing. These are the patterns. Yes, this makes sense. And that is good for the parents to know. They have the resources. They have the tools. So I disagree with her in that. I think it's very important to have those resources, tools at a very early age, because being an early educator, I know that's important. I know that having those resources early makes it different. Early childhood is so important. So these parents can give the kids what they need at a young age. It could have vastly positive effects for these children if they seek appropriate tools and therapy to help their children. But on the other end, like with the labels, again, I think that it's helpful to understand, like, your child, if they're a deeply feeling child, but I think your child is more than the label. They're more than ADHD. They're more than deeply feeling. They are a unique individual, and to not get caught up. For example, Myers-Briggs personality test. Adults take this. Does this tell you everything about you? No, I think we should use that to understand ourselves and the intricacies, but we are dynamic and diverse, and there's more to us than that. Because obviously, if you took every INFJ and put them together, they wouldn't all be exactly the same, and they would have differences in their personality, in their childhood, in their genetics, and in their environment. So anyways, I'm not a big fan of labels, but I think it is helpful for parents to have tools to help support their child. From the CDC website, between the ages of 2 to 8, boys were more likely to have the mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder than girls. And if you go to their website, they have a chart. So you can see that depression is very low in the toddler age. So they have 3 categories, ages 3 to 5, 6 to 11, 12 to 17. And so the age 3 to 5, depression is very low. And that kind of makes sense. Very low, 0 point something, very, very, very low. And then we get to anxiety. Okay, that is increasing for 3 to 5 year olds, a little bit around 1% for 3 to 5 year olds, anxiety. Then we have the behavior. So we know that's going to be more. And for behavior for 3 to 5 year olds, that's a little bit over 3%. And so many of us think, okay, the toddler years, that's where the most behaviors are. That's the toughest part. Let's just get through that. But this chart in the CDC is very eye-opening, because we see from ages 6 to 11, behavior triples from the toddler year. So that could also explain or make sense why we are seeing, you know, kids are going to elementary school, they're going to kindergarten, they're going to first grade and through the early grades. And that is probably when a lot of the behavior like ADHD maybe is being diagnosed, right? So that could be part of it, plus some other factors as well. But That is eye-opening that behavior is actually in ages 6 to 11, three times the amount as in toddlers for behavior disorder. Now, talking about this, there are some indicators for positive mental health in a survey that they did between 2016 and 2019 by asking parents questions. And these were the key things they found in positive mental health outcomes for young children: affection, resilience, positivity, curiosity, and those were for children ages 3 to 5. So we were talking about a little bit earlier, highly sensitive children or sensitive children. And the author seems to convey in the book that parents are feeding their kids to become more sensitive. And they're feeding into that by giving them the foods or cutting their tags on their shirt. And therefore, they are growing more sensitive children who have more and more sensitivity and anxiety and depression as they age, and that parents are feeding that. I think that is interesting. I think a lot of parents are probably just not doing that intentionally. If they were, I think they're just trying to survive. But that is the point that she brought up, that she believes that parents are contributing to say the least. Now, the author does bring up a story about toddler behavior with a boy who had trouble putting his shoes on. He didn't want to put his shoes on. And then he also was hitting. And that segues us into aggression, our part two. Okay, toddlers or young children with aggression. So there's a study, Brain Development and Physical Aggression, How a Small Gender Difference Grows into a Violence Problem. All right, so in this study, they said that girls and boys were just as likely to hit, kick, and bite and exhibit these behaviors during the toddler and early years. But then they found that for girls, this behavior, this aggressive behavior, declined more rapidly, where the boys, it stayed higher and went longer. This was referenced in the book by Abigail Schreier. She referenced this study, The Development of Physical Aggression from Toddlerhood to Pre-Adolescence, and they studied 10,658 children over 6 years. And the things that they were measuring was like kicks, bites, hits to other children, how many fights they got in, and if they reacted with anger or fighting as well. And they rated it either never, sometimes, or often. It's interesting to know that with aggression, and a lot of the examples of aggression she uses in the book were boys. So I also found that was interesting, and this study also kind of shows that as well. There is another study that takes away just the boy-girl dynamic and goes more into the type of play, the style of play. So the study is called Preschool Gender Type Play at Age 3.5 Predicts Physical Aggression at Age 13. So they had three different groups. So they had the masculine play, feminine play, and neutral play. And the children who had the masculine play were way more likely to exhibit aggression later on. And it was regardless of gender. So whether it was a female or a male 3.5-year-old, it was the style of play. So the style of play was masculine or feminine. So even a female 3.5-year-old girl could have a masculine, more aggressive playing style. So it took the gender out of it and just looked at the playing style. The children who had more feminine play style had far less aggression than the masculine type of play. And this also held true with socioeconomic background and behavioral problems at that age as well. So this suggests that early play can really indicate how our children grow and develop and what we're going to see later on. And this proved it was regardless of sex. It also challenges the idea that boys that like trucks and cars are more likely to be aggressive, because it's saying it was their playing style. It wasn't what they were playing with. I would love to make a side note about the aggression thing. The author referenced a study, and then I found these two other studies about aggressive behavior. And this other one I found separate from the book. The reason I'm bringing it up is because we're on the topic of aggression and I want to cover it quickly. So I do think, yes, perhaps there is a playing style that is more aggressive, and we do see that maybe boys are more likely to exhibit aggressive behavior. It doesn't mean that girls don't or won't. It's just that they are more likely to. But the interesting thing is, I think it's not just that component. I also think that aggressive behavior can be reinforced, and there's a huge environmental aspect to it as well. So I don't think it is all just that the kid was necessarily born with it or just developed into it without any other factors. I have seen well-meaning parents accidentally reinforce aggressive behavior when they think they're doing the opposite. And we have seen that, for example, using time out can increase aggressive behavior, and using time in can decrease, and the studies they've done in the last few years decrease aggressive behavior. So there are certain things, and that is only just one example, but there's many other examples, like more tangible real life examples I could give, but I'm also reviewing this book. I don't want to get too far into that. But in the book, she did mention how teachers were saying their students were exhibiting a lot of aggressive behavior. And so let's get into teachers, talk therapy, and teaching kids empathy.
Hey mamas, let's take a quick break. I wanted to share with you Meltdown Mastery, the Listening and Skilled Toddler mini course. Get helpful tools sent straight to your inbox and get your child to listen in 2 seconds. Imagine a calm home with less meltdowns. Go to the show notes for the link or head to twinmomroadmap.com/guides for super helpful tools and resources. Also, become a part of our cozy Facebook community for support, conversation, and double the laughter. Link in show notes to join.
So, two things in the book that she mentioned was that she gave examples and anecdotes and quotes from parents talking about their dissatisfaction with. And the two things were trauma-informed care and K-cell-cell. So, trauma-informed care. Now, some of the examples that were given in the book, it made it sound like teachers were making kids to divulge private information that they were not comfortable with, and it was angering the parents, and it was not appropriate. Now, if this is happening in classrooms, I don't know. I'm not in every classroom, but when I was a teacher for 10 years. I stopped teaching when I had the boys 3 years ago. So I was a teacher within the last 5 years. And every year we had to do trauma-informed training to make sure we were up to date with it. And it was really given to us, not necessarily to do lessons on, like stated in the book, but it was more so if a student had said something to us, we would know how to respond. You know, if a student made a comment like they're feeling depressed, or if they were showing signs that there was something really wrong and maybe there was like bullying going on, or maybe there was something behind it, that teachers would know the signs or know how to approach and talk to a student to make sure they were okay. It never was a lesson. If there was a lesson, it was led by the counselors. Maybe because the subjects I was teaching, especially when I was teaching the older grades, when I was teaching middle school, because I've taught preschool, elementary, and middle school, when I was teaching middle school, perhaps the subject I was teaching wouldn't be the class they would have come into, because I was teaching mostly science and English. So maybe they wouldn't have come into those classes and they would have went into the history classes and the social studies classes. So maybe that's why. I don't know firsthand and never experienced what they're talking about. The other thing she talks about is the K-cell-cell. And so that is this framework, and I'm going to read this to you. So it says the K-cell wheel. So at the center, we have the four core social and emotional competencies. So we have self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. And that is surrounded by the four circles that children can be supported with, how we support them with that. And that's classrooms, schools, families and caregivers, and communities. So she was saying how this teaching of self-awareness leads to narcissism. Okay, wow. I am shocked to hear that take from her in the book, and that the self-awareness, the social awareness, thinking of oneself just leads to more anxiety and depression and more narcissism. And we're better off to be thinking of others, doing for others, sucking things up and not thinking about them. And the fact they're teaching this to young kids in school, like preschool or kindergarten or beyond, it seems like she disagrees with it in the book. But I totally disagree with, I think it is important to teach empathy to our children. And if you listen to the narcissism expert, Dr. Ramani, who was just on a big podcast recently, Diary of a CEO, Dr. Ramani, so go check that podcast out. He says that people who are narcissistic, yes, maybe there is some kind of genetic component, but there's also an environmental component, how they, their childhood, what their parents, how that all happened, right? So if the parents are neglecting their child or emotionally unavailable and some of these things, that formula is leading to narcissism, that sounds like the opposite of teaching empathy, first of all. And she does talk about narcissists and how they do understand and can manipulate empathy to take advantage of other people, but eventually their true colors will come out and you will see that they aren't this empathetic person that they were pretending to be. This type of person is not just a child that is typically developing with healthy relationships that's learning about empathy. No, this narcissism thing, I think she just completely does not understand it and she's misusing the word narcissism. Maybe she should have used the word more self-absorbed, always thinking of the self, but she used narcissism, which is more extreme. So I think she is wrong and I think it is important to learn empathy. But it does matter how we teach it. As I said, I'm not in every classroom, so I don't know exactly what they are doing currently with teaching empathy. All right, so part four, she talks about parenting styles and gentle parenting. Okay, so these are some of the statements that she has made about parents these days. So she said, moms are spending way more time with their kids. Now, that is shocking information to me. And she did have a reference quote. So this was from some journal article. And I don't have the reference for it. So she pretty much referenced that we're spending more time with our kids. Okay. But that doesn't seem to add up because moms are working more and their kids are in daycare more. So how are they spending more time with their kids? That doesn't quite add up to me. Maybe she means like in general, like not necessarily younger kids. Maybe this is more to the older kids where kids used to be playing outside in the neighborhoods. And parents did their parenting stuff, kids went off and did their kids stuff, and that is what she's referring to. She also mentions that parents are not using real consequences and they're using therapeutic speak. A lot of that is on Instagram. There are these Instagram therapists and psychologists that are giving advice, especially to toddler parents, and it's very lengthy, very wordy. Like, no, honey, I told you not to jump on the couch. And if you jump on the couch, you're allowed to feel like you want to jump on the couch and you're allowed to feel like you're mad that I'm going to take you off the couch, but we don't really do that. And so next time, can you please not jump on the couch? So anyways, that's like an example of like what she's talking about is using like therapy speak and not real consequences. And I do agree with her that I see a lot of those kind of posts and I don't agree with them. Do these people even work with toddlers? Because that is just a bunch of nonsense. If our toddlers cannot connect A to B, they're not going to understand or know what parents are talking about. So that's just, it's clearly not the right tools for a toddler. Okay. She also said that parents aren't using real consequences. Like if a toddler, let's say, throws a cup on the floor and the parent's like, we don't throw cups on the floor. We're now, because you did that, we are not going to the playground. No more playground for you. Okay. I also agree with that. That is not effective strategy, but I have a different term for it where she calls it not a real consequence. I call it an indirect consequence. This is not taking the park away when your toddler threw something or hits a sibling. They're not going to make that connection. Like that is kind of like, oh, I'm going to just take this thing away from you. Yeah, the toddler's not going to make the connection. The only thing that they're going to make the connection to is something that's in the moment. So I do agree with her that those strategies don't work, but I don't think all parents are doing that. And she kind of is alluding to the fact that all the parents are doing that. And that's simply, I don't think is true. She also said that parents are giving too many choices to kids. They're giving unlimited choices. So Yeah, that could be a problem. You know, that's why I recommend giving limited choices, especially to toddlers. You are giving them a choice, but you are ultimately in control. You are the leader as the parent, and you can give your toddler 2 to 3 choices. That's as much as about they will be able to handle for the most part. So give them limited choices that you approve of. She also says that parents are relying too much on other experts and not their own self. In the past, parents, they used to do and get advice from their parents, but you know, our generations are the first ones to not want to do what our parents did, throw everything out the window and say, we're doing this gentle parenting thing that you guys didn't do. So that is interesting. I think it is important though, however, to have people in our circle, like the pediatrician, doctors, maybe a preschool teacher, a daycare worker, that is going to give us some feedback. That is good to know. For example, if a pediatrician says, hey, based off of this assessment, your child's language is a little bit behind, how about trying this strategy? That's an important thing to know. And yeah, I mean, a parent could ignore it, but it's like, okay, well, what parent is exactly going to ignore that? It's important to have these people in our circle, but ultimately, we do need to trust our gut instinct. And yeah, if a teacher, pediatrician, or parenting coach or expert suggests something that you're not comfortable with, trust your gut, okay? Because ultimately, you are the parent. It is your decision. So in some ways, I agree with her. In other ways, I disagree. And I think it is important to have a circle of people and feedback because they know other things, they see other things, and they can make us aware of them. That is not a bad thing. She also talks about how parents won't tell their children no. And so that is a tricky thing because if we overuse no, we become the broken record. So yes, we can still use no, but we need to be careful on how and when we use it. And that when we use it, it actually has impact because we don't want no to become so normalized that it means nothing. She also says that because of parents giving their kids whatever they want all the time, they can't wait and they don't have patience. And I have seen this be an issue with preschool and teachers saying, yeah, this is a struggle. Waiting patience is a super struggle and is a skill that a lot of toddlers didn't develop. They might know their ABCs, but they don't know how to wait. They don't know how to take turns or share. And yet they know, you know, their ABCs, 1, 2, 3s. So yeah, this is an important skill. And now with technology and giving kids TV and iPad, and there's even less of the waiting. There's even less of the patience. So, and I know that's something parents do not want to talk about or hear, but it is something I have to bring up. And I do think it is having an impact there. And she also says if parents don't get authority, they're going to seek it elsewhere. So they don't get it from the parents. They're going to seek it elsewhere. Authority, maybe in a friend, a group, a gang, and something beyond that's not healthy, right? They're going to seek it elsewhere. So she says that. And speaking of authority, let's tie that to the next part, which is parenting style. So we have authoritarian. Okay, that's very controlling, maybe yelling, hitting or spanking, hand slapping, all of that authoritarian. Then we have authoritative, which is in the middle, firm boundaries and consequences without the yelling, hitting, or spanking, right? But firm, we're firm in our delivery and consequences, but we are still loving, but we hold boundaries. And then we have permissive parenting where a parent just lets their kid run the show, run the house, or they attempt to have some control over things, but they always cave in and they slip into permissive. Like they want to take the TV away, but their toddler screams and cries and they go, okay, sorry, honey, didn't mean to upset you. Let me put the TV back on, right? Permissive parenting. And yes, I think just because you've done that once or twice, does it overall make you a permissive parent? But if this is consistent, then yes, this would be permissive parenting. It's super tough. We want to pacify our toddlers because it is a tough stage, but there are consequences to that. So we talk about the 3 different parenting styles. And that the middle ground, the authoritative parenting style is the most effective style. And okay, I'll probably say his name wrong, Baumrind. He had a quote in the book that authoritative is the most successful. And this comes from his study, The Effects of Authoritative Parental Control on Child Behavior. Now that we talked about the parenting styles, let's finish this section up with a story from the book. She talked about a dad who tried to do gentle parenting. And gentle parenting is pretty much viewed as somewhere between authoritative and permissive parenting. Although some gentle parenting fans or experts will say it is definitely authoritative. It's just that it's getting misused or misunderstood or not implemented correctly by parents. So he was trying to be more of a gentle parent. And what was happening was that he was either this dad, he would tell his son not to do things, not to hit, not to do this or that. And his son would keep doing it or not listen, continue to hit. And so the dad would get very mad and he would start to yell and hit his son or spank. So what happened was sometimes it seemed like he was being a gentle parent. Maybe sometimes he was slipping into being a permissive parent. And then other times he was being an authoritarian parent. The author seems to blame gentle parenting for his struggles, but I think his struggles are simply that he was being an inconsistent parent, almost more detrimental because the child is never going to know what to expect. Is he going to get which dad today? Which is dad this hour? Is he going to spank me? Is he going to say it? Oh, never mind, and just turn a cheek? Or is he going to say, we don't do that, I'm going to take the toy away? You know, which dad is he today, at this moment, at this second? I don't know. I don't feel safe. Also, I'm going to keep testing boundaries and testing dad to see which dad I get. So I think that is not a gentle parenting issue. This is an inconsistent parenting issue. And I think this child is going to continue his aggressive behavior, like hitting his sibling and hitting, and he is going to carry that. We talked about earlier aggressive behavior, and I think that he is going to, like the study show, he's going to have a higher level of aggressive behavior because his dad is spanking and hitting him also, but because his dad is being inconsistent and he doesn't feel safe and he doesn't know which dad he's going to get. That's probably going to lead to even more aggression. And as boys carry it later on into their childhood, this boy will as well. So that is a really sad story to hear. And I do hear stories from parents like this, where, you know, they're trying and sometimes it's one parent's doing one parenting style and the other's doing the other. I personally grew up in a home that was like that too. I had an authoritarian parent and then I had a parent that was a more balanced parent that would never yell or hit. So I had two different parents. As a child, that can be confusing as well. You know, why is one parent not doing this? And they would never do that. But why is the other one doing hitting or spanking or whatever? And why is that okay? So like, you know, and so that can be confusing, but imagine if it's the same person, how confusing that would be. Because at least I knew this parent is going to be like this. This parent is going to be like this. At least I knew in my mind, but this poor child does not know what he's going to get. All right, part five. So let's wrap this up. So independence, I'm going to keep this short and sweet because the other ones went kind of long. So the author talks about how kids are just not independent anymore these days, that parents are doing everything for their kids, and how independence is important. She mentions a Netflix show that talks about children in Japan and how they are more independent, that they can walk home from school at a very young age. They go to the shops, they can go to the store. They know how to do things. And children here in the United States just simply don't have those independent skills. The show she's talking about is called Old Enough on Netflix. I haven't watched it, so maybe I will watch the show. In the show, it did kind of make it sound like they were toddlers, but in the book, she somehow referenced that they were really 5 to 7 year olds. So we're talking really kindergarten age and a little bit older. She also talks about how kids, if they don't know independence, then, you know, they're not practicing it. They're going to know. And I totally agree. Independence is a very important skill. One more point on this, and then I have my own thoughts. She says, our kids don't know they're connected to others. Okay, that is an interesting quote she made. And I think that she gave an example of a kid screaming on an airplane. So here's the thing. So if we don't teach, she seemed to be against the social awareness, the self-awareness and social skills. Okay, well, if you're against that, but then you're upset that kids aren't connected to others, then I think you're misunderstanding the whole CASEL cell framework and teaching empathy. You're misunderstanding it because, yeah, if this girl screamed and the parent only cared about the girl and the parent never said, hey, like, we got to think about those around us. Yeah, that's why we do teach social skills and empathy, like thinking of others. So I think she just misunderstands the whole teaching concept. I think that was the weakest part in her book because she only used parent quotes complaining about CASEL and the cell framework. And so therefore, I feel like is conflicting in her book because she says children need to understand others and understand they affect others and be connected, yet she doesn't think they should learn about it. Makes no sense to me. Okay, so as a closing, one of my other thoughts was, now this is for the older kids, but I do want to just say it since I think it's important. She says how talk therapy doesn't always work or doesn't work. Obviously, she said like having therapy for children who really need it is important, but that it's being overused in the schools, overused for every child, and parents are using parent therapy talk. And so it's being overused in the home, it's being overused in the schools, and it's really only should be for children who really need it. And it's just gone viral or airborne, right? So yeah. So here's the thing. I do agree with her on just ruminating and talking about your issues and problems and never moving on. I have a personal example. So when I was dealing with some people in my social circle that I was really struggling with, and so I seek support. So I had counseling support with that. And it was always rehashing, talking, and not getting the tools I needed. And it caused me to have more anxiety and depression. So I actually really super agree with her on this. It wasn't until I somehow on YouTube found little inklings of things about like empathy and narcissism that I started thinking maybe the issue I'm dealing with some of these people is narcissism, and maybe I need to talk to a narcissism expert. And so that's what I did. I talked to a narcissism expert. She was a coach. We had two phone calls, and the first phone call completely changed my life. She totally understood. When I explained things, she totally understood what I was talking about. And she gave me tools that I could use. So what happened was I used the tools. I didn't have anxiety or depression anymore. I was able to move on. I was able to enjoy my life, and I was empowered and became a stronger person. So that is where I kind of agree with her, but kind of nuancedly don't, only just because like, yeah, I wasn't a person with a severe disorder or anything, but I really did need help. And I was almost like when I was talking to the general therapy people, the general therapy counseling, it made me blame myself for everything. Like I was at fault because nobody really understands the way that people with narcissism, how they gaslight people, how they triangulate people, how they do certain things. Those are all very terms if you know about narcissism. If you don't, you might not know what I'm talking about. But there's certain things, or they love bomb. They do these things. And the average person who doesn't understand narcissism is not going to understand their manipulative moves. And then what happens is you go to blame the self. So Dr. Amani is an excellent person to check out if you're dealing or think you're dealing with somebody with narcissism. But yes, just talking about problems without getting the tools is not helpful. But if you find somebody, because she's like against kind of the experts in some ways, but if you find somebody who can really help you with your problem and give you tools to move on, that's where I disagree. I think that's good. So you don't have to be diagnosed with a behavioral mental disorder per se to need help and get tools and move on. So that's where I disagree with her, but I do agree with her on just ruminating about the same problem without doing anything about it and getting tools to move on. If we have the tools to move on, I am for it and think it is great, healthy to have. Overall, I thought the book was an interesting, fascinating, good read. Like I said, I don't agree with her on everything, but there are definitely things I do agree with her on. So I tend to be split in the middle about the book. But I still recommend reading it because I'm a person, I don't easily get offended about reading different viewpoints. I just find them to be interesting. So it was a quick read, but I was also looking through the lens of parents with toddlers and young children. So yeah, it was a good read. I still recommend reading it, even though I don't agree with all of it. And I hope you enjoy it.
And that wraps up another episode filled with tools and insights to help your parenting journey have clarity and ease. Remember, every child is unique, and so is our experience, especially when there's more than one. Keep celebrating those small victories and learning along the way. I'm Heather, your twin mama guide, and until next time, here's to raising skilled, self-regulated toddlers who listen, learn, and love. Take care and see you soon.